When you hear about carbon dioxide, we tend to think negatively of it. Excessive CO2 in the Earth's atmosphere changes the climate, it contributes to global warming, and it increases the carbon footprint. So most of us think CO2 is a net negative. But that's not the real picture. CO2 is actually necessary for a lot of applications, from carbonated beverages to fire extinguishers. The gas is also used when casting mold to make them harder. Meat processing facilities use CO2 instead of electrical guns to stun animals. And the gas is also critical to the water purification industry. I'm Christy Yai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be looking at the cost of CO2 shortages worldwide and all the industries that this shortage is affecting. Beyond fizzy drinks, CO2 is also used for a variety of applications across a gamut of industries. The global carbon dioxide market reached a value of nearly $9.7 billion in 2020, having increased at a compounded annual growth rate of 4.9%. Unfortunately, for the foreseeable future, fluctuating CO2 supply issues and rising prices are here to stay. Prices on average have already increased 40%. In the US, 77% of all CO2 is used in food processing, dry ice, and beverages. So that is a huge amount of demand, especially in the summer when you have higher demand for beer and soda. And while CO2 can be distilled from the air, that method is expensive and ineffective. Therefore, it is usually captured from other sources where it is produced as a natural byproduct or waste material. This could be anything from burning fossil fuels to methane or ammonia production. The most efficient way of producing CO2 is from ammonia. Ammonia is an inorganic chemical used in many household cleaning products, plastics, and food storage. The majority of ammonia is used in farming for fertilizer. Around 80% of ammonia produced worldwide is used as plant fertilizer, and it's produced by burning natural gas to separate the carbon and hydrogen atoms. The hydrogen is then combined with nitrogen to create ammonia. The carbon atoms then combine with oxygen to create CO2 as a byproduct, which is then captured and sold. Most ammonia plants rely on steam reformation of natural gas to produce CO2. And around 1.6 tons of CO2 is produced per ton of ammonia. When these ammonia and fertilizer plants shut down or plan for maintenance, which they do from April to July, this greatly impacts the overall supply chain of CO2. And with today's higher global energy prices, ammonia suppliers to curtail the output, which in turn hits the manufacturing of CO2. The higher price of natural gas also means that factories have to charge more for ammonia. And this causes farmers who need it to import it cheaply from overseas. Consequently, less ammonia was produced this past year, and there's less CO2 as a result. While most of the beverage industry is accustomed to the occasional CO2 shortage in the past, it has never been on a scale like the one we see today. For months, regular users have only been able to get 30 to 50% of what they normally use. And now for more, we bring in Bubba Horwitz. So now, Bubba, how did this CO2 shortage start? What was the catalyst for this global shortage in supply?
Hi, Christy. Great to be with you. You know, well, it started actually through COVID and through the pandemic because of the less amount of usage of actually fossil fuels, which is where a lot of the CO2 comes from. So, you know, we had the supply chain breakdown because of COVID. A lot of the issues were directly related to COVID. And of course, a lot of the issues are government mandated from the United States, where we, you know, have cut down our own processing of oil and natural gas. You know, everybody forgets that fossil fuels are about 80% of our daily lives, and they have an effect on everything, including, as you mentioned in your opening, hydrous ammonia, which is up about 3,000%, which is making farming much more expensive these days as well.
Absolutely. And now, why aren't there more CO2 capture facilities being built in order to meet the rising global demand for CO2?
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, when you cut off your own supply and you cut off your own natural resources, the cost of production gets to be too dramatic. So are you going to build a plant which is going to take fossil fuels when you have to import the oil from Saudi Arabia, okay, and pay twice as much as you'd have to pay if you produce it yourself? The cost becomes spiraling. I mean, we look at some of the numbers, and this all ties back into inflation. And unfortunately, it's self-created by the administration that continues to push the climate change agenda, which is really more of a falsehood because it's not really, you know, CO2 may have some effect on environment, but if you look at one planet, which is Mars, okay, which has 95% more CO2 than we have here, their daily fluctuation in temperatures is about 200 degrees from 80 degrees Fahrenheit to minus 120. So I don't think that it's really the carbon dioxide that is actually causing the climate change.
That's really interesting. And now, are there any replacements for CO2 for some of these industries that you mentioned?
Well, nitrogen is one. I mean, you know, again, it takes a lot of the same process, right? I mean, it's not cheap. And this is the problem. The cost always gets passed on to consumer, but nitrogen is one way. And in fact, there's been a couple of car manufacturers like Nikola that were going to use hydrogen and nitrogen to try to as fuel and create. But it didn't really work out because, again, we talk about a lot more costs, a lot more engineering and technology to get these things done when we have this simple solution right in front of us, and yet refuse to use what is basic and simple here for us.
But do you think that is a sustainable solution? I mean, we don't have an endless supply of fossil fuels.
Well, we actually do have an endless supply of fossil fuels. I mean, at current usage in the United States alone, there's over a 300-year supply that is without drilling and going into environment-safe areas, right? And we have easy access to a 300-year supply at current usage. And I would suggest that within the next 300 years, we might figure out how to use some other energy sources instead of watching our government steal the money without a real plan. I mean, I think that's really more the issue here, is this is about money, and it's about the government and the administration taking advantage of something that is really not necessarily factual, because if you look at one of the Vostok Index, it shows you that the world itself runs in about 80,000-year cycles, and there's nothing you can do about if you believe there isn't climate change, which personally I do not.
And now, going back to CO2, which industry do you think is affected the most by the current CO2 shortage?
Budweiser, you know, the alcohol is alcohol industry is very much affected. Beer, Pepsi, you know, the soft drinks. But, you know, remember, the meat industry, the packaging industry, nobody realizes how much of CO2 we actually use that goes into the production to either make things safer for everybody or to make things cheaper for everybody. And that is another item that creates much more inflation in the world because of this. I mean, the lack of burning natural gas in the UK this year was a big deal because, of course, they didn't have any and the supply. And of course, the Russia-Ukraine war is not helping any of this because there's a dramatic amount of fertilizer components that go into the CO2 that would bring these prices way down as well if we could get to them.
So this entire thing is all caused by a supply chain glut, whether you look at it from an energy point of view or from a fertilizer point of view. Who is responsible for creating this glut in the supply chain in the first place?
Well, I think you can marry China with the United States. Okay, China, because of their phony COVID shutdowns, which really slowed the supply chain, and the United States for stopping their own production of their own natural resource of oil. You know, if we would have never stopped, we wouldn't have the problems that we have today. And of course, the UK and Germany and others on that side of the world would have been in much better shape as well because they would have been able to protect themselves and buy natural liquefied natural gas from the United States of America.
So, what do you think it will take to restart this entire cycle? Do we just need an entirely new political agenda?
Well, we do need to go back to that, but obviously, I don't think we're getting there that fast. I think what's going to happen as the supply chain starts to open up. Now, one of the things we have in problem now is what? We have a major problem in the worldwide economy. So how fast is the supply chain going to kick back up when there's going to be a lack of demand for product? You know, this is a vicious circle that you create when you make a very bad decision to begin with without giving it any thought. And that is what, when the United States decided to stop producing their own oil and being a net exporter of oil, that is the chain that started the event. And then you throw in the COVID shutdowns in China, and suddenly you have no supply chain, you have no goods, and now you have no economy with nothing but job layoffs.
Very true. So do you think that the lesson here for every single country and every economy is that you try to become more self-sufficient? And if so, do you think that's what we're looking at in the future?
Well, you know, I don't think, obviously, not all countries can be self-sufficient. The United States can be and has been. And I think that, you know, with the way that this administration is operating now, I don't think they're looking to go that way, which is unfortunate for everybody in the world, because is when the United States is in control and has power, they can supply the rest of the world versus not. So this CO2 shortage, I think, is going to be around for an extended period of time, which is really only going to add on to the cost of goods and services for the consumer, many who are not working anymore and have gone through many layoffs on their jobs.
That is unfortunate to hear. Thank you so much, Bubba Horowitz. Bubba is going to stay with us because when we come back, the national industrial CO2 shortage is threatening business operations and public services around the U.S. So how many dollars are these companies about to lose? You're about to find out after the break.
I look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence as own existence.
Has been killing its own people in Donbass for 8 years. It's amazing that this is not being covered in Western media and hasn't been covered for the last 8 years.
I'm here for 5 minutes, and then I'm told the first five people they found, it was five decapitated heads.
Vale la pena correrli? E questa domanda poi fa scattare tutti gli altri meccanismi. Lo fai perché sai che bisogna farlo, che devi.
The information war. Almost all the independent journalists who pointed out that NATO and the US were directly responsible for initiating the military conflict in Ukraine are casualties of it.
As long as we want the war to continue, we will fight that war using Ukrainians as proxies, and we will fight it to the last Ukrainian death.
That's what's happened in Donbass this whole time. These aren't objects, these are people. And so that's why I do what I do. That's why I'm here.
Welcome back to The Cost of Everything. We are analyzing the cost of CO2. The national industrial CO2 shortage is threatening business operations and public services across the US. City pools have been closed because of the shortage of CO2, which is used to balance and maintain pH levels in the pool water. The beer business also depends quite a bit on the commodity market. And supply chain shortages have become normalized over the last 3 years for things like cans, glass, malt, barley, hops, stainless steel, and even domestic shipping costs for all these goods. However, CO2 has not been normalized. CO2 is a brewing essential that has had serious production and supply issues since the beginning of the pandemic. CO2 traditionally runs about $200 to $300 a ton, but many are reporting prices as high as $600 a ton. Germany's bottled water industry is also feeling the impact of reduced supplies of CO2, with manufacturers now forced to cut production. Some companies report they can continue limited production, but others have altogether shut down. Dry ice is the frozen form of CO2, and wineries use it during harvest. The gas displaces oxygen in order to keep the grapes from spoiling. Wineries have now reported that the cost of CO2 increasing by over 60% in 2022. Food processing facilities are also running into issues, as some like Morrison's and Ocado have suspended orders of frozen food as they can't create dry ice to keep it cool. Other processors like Tyson Foods, General Mills, and Kraft Heinz are urgently begging suppliers, as carbon dioxide is also used for packaging, stunning animals, and cooling. And although the cannabis industry only represents a small portion of the market for industrial carbon dioxide, the gas is absolutely crucial to cannabis cultivators. Most indoor growers use supplemental CO2 in their facilities to help maximize photosynthesis, which uses light energy to convert water and CO2 into plant sugars to fuel growth. The current shortage has left cannabis growers scrambling to maintain production, causing yields to fall. CO2 is also used in various medical procedures, semiconductor manufacturing, as well as to extract crude oil from the ground. In short, a lack of CO2 is a big deal for a lot of different industries. And now we got Bubba Horowitz back with us. So Bubba, when do you think supply and demand will finally balance itself out? How long is this market expected to remain tight?
I think it's going to be for quite a while. I wouldn't be surprised if it's another year or longer. The way that things are headed right now, you know, as we look at the slowing economy, which slows down the production, because, you know, basically the earth is 1% carbon dioxide. And, you know, we don't have that much. And so we're dependent on burning it and going, you know, into carbon capture with other companies that can do it. But it is not, it is an expensive process. And now when you bring in the cost of money, right, the higher interest rates, it has a dramatic effect on farmers when they're doing that. So all of these things become problems and cost. And when you're running out of money and you're running out of jobs, the cost becomes a much bigger effect here. And this is where the issue is going to lie. So I think it's an extended period of time.
That is very unfortunate for most people. And now, are there new carbon capture technologies out there that can help alleviate some of this shortage? And how much do these new technologies cost?
Well, they cost a lot more. There is technology, and again, you know, Occidental Petroleum has it, NRG, and there's a number of companies that have the ability, but it is still at a much higher and a much more dramatic cost to get it done. And of course, the cost becomes the bottom line to the consumer. And it also becomes, you know, a safety issue, because a lot of this is how they help seal the packaging when you're buying something. So, you know, again, but you cannot continue to raise prices, and we're already overpaying, you know, dramatically. And now what happens if we have a food shortage because of this year? Because when you tie in the cost of money that farmers pay, and farmers are the key here, they pay more for borrowing money than anybody, and they borrow the most amount of money, but they're considered risk capital. So with their cost of input and the hydrous ammonia, which is dramatically higher, and their cost of money higher, some may choose not to plant, which could create a food shortage, which would mean even higher cost and less jobs.
Now, this isn't the first time the world has faced CO2 shortages. There have been CO2 shortages in the past. So how do we get through this before, and why wasn't it as extreme as we see it today?
Well, population is dramatically higher. There's a much bigger clamoring now on climate change, which, again, whether you believe it or not, and I will say once again, I don't particularly believe in it, but if there wasn't outrage of climate control and global warming back when we had the shortages in the past. So they were much easier handled. Now the regulations make it much harder to get through, to get back to a normalized balance of CO2 and the carbon, and to do what we need to get done. So you bring in the higher cost, the tougher way to produce it, and strip your earth of natural resources, and all of a sudden you've got a much bigger problem because there's too many politicians in the way of putting the deal together and letting it work naturally and letting the free markets themselves work.
Now, as you know, we both are proponents of free markets. However, with the current environment, regulatory environment, do you think that any semblance of reversion back to what you said is even possible at this point?
I would hope so, but I would think that under the current United States administration, there is not a chance. Now, again, one thing fortunate here is that every 4 years is a big election, and we could see some change. But obviously, you can see by the cost of goods and services, the lack of jobs, the shortage of CO2, the shortage in the supply chain, the trucks backed up, and the function of the country being dramatically affected, that certainly we could see a rollback by the next administration, which isn't that far off.
Now, CO2 shortages isn't really a commonly debated topic or even really talked about. Why don't you think most people are even aware of this?
I don't think most people even realize how much we actually use. I think it's, for example, just fossil fuels alone. 80% of everything you do in life is related to fossil fuels. So they can't put together that and mentally in your mind that that's how much CO2 you use. And of course, almost every product you buy at a store has some relationship to carbon dioxide, either the sealing of the packaging, the growing of the product, whatever it happens to be. There's a relationship directly correlated, but people don't really think that deeply into the products that they buy, right? How do they get produced? A water bottle takes an enormous amount of oil to make a plastic bottle of water. So we don't think like that, but that is the actual fact that the amount of CO2, the amount of fossil fuels that we use is enormous, and it's not going to change anytime soon. And the carbon footprint has not gotten any worse. So we've made it cleaner, but still we have to get the cooperation from the people that are in control.
And now you would think that we have an abundance of CO2 in the world, given all the rhetoric that we hear about carbon emissions and cutting down on carbon waste. So do you think that that is all one big facade?
I do. I think, if you look at, we'll compare Mars to the United States or Mars to the Earth, 1% is the balance of CO2 on Earth. 95% is the balance on Mars, which is obviously why their stabilization of temperatures so wide. But we have to be able to create it from using the services and grabbing it the way that we've done, versus trying to depend on it as a natural resource, because it is a natural resource, but it's a natural resource that is created by another effect. So it's cause and effect of how we get there. And unfortunately, you've got too much of the green energy talk, which is really a fallacy. And even if it's real, at what cost do you want to destroy the world and trying to preserve it? Because you're destroying families, you're destroying people, and you're destroying wealth by letting it happen the way things are going today.
Now, if that were the case, then why don't we hear any of this rhetoric from, let's say, environmentalists?
The same environmentalists that said the world was going to end 20 years ago, or the ones that are saying the world's going to end in 2030. There is so much rhetoric that is out there that it's a force to try to believe something, and it ties into a much bigger economic picture of the great global reset, the currency markets, the entire world, which is basically, in my mind, gone mad, trying to convince us that. That the world's going to end because of the amount of pollution, we have never been cleaner, and we have never burned more coal, which is the biggest pollutant there is. So again, to me, it's a bunch of nonsense.
So now, is there any possibility of fixing the current situation that we're in if there's such a great divide in terms of the rhetoric, with one side saying that we need to cut down on carbon emissions and the other side saying that we need fossil fuel in order to even survive?
Well, I think there is a way. I mean, hopefully it'll be done in a peaceful way, and it'll be done through naturals, through people finally realizing that by cutting off your nose despite your face, you're probably causing yourself some trouble. I think that eventually, we may realize that the damage that is being done financially, economically, and to everybody is not worth what they think of, because the bottom line is, even if you could go to that green climate that you want, you can't get there today anyways. The power grid in the United States could not handle the electric vehicles. It could not handle what it's done. And the amount of oil and CO2 to produce those cars is so dramatic that that would have a bigger effect on the carbon footprint than the actual switching over itself.
Well, that's all we got time for. So thank you so much, Bubba Horowitz, for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
The losers are unfortunately all the end users of the CO2 market, and these include everything from food processors to beverage makers, water purification and public services, to the medical and cannabis industries. All these producers and manufacturers are now faced with higher costs, uncertain shipments of CO2, rationing, and shortages, which all in turn goes to shrink their bottom lines. And unfortunately, CO2 is difficult and expensive to transport, so it can't just be brought in from abroad. Essentially, countries that run out of CO2 are on their own until they can get more. So this is where the supply chain breaks down. However, there are some solutions for beverage makers in the form of equipment that can capture CO2 produced during brewing. Some craft breweries have added a CO2 reclamation system to capture CO2, which is then used for tank purging and packaging. It has eliminated the need for the brewery to import CO2, and the system prevents more than 1 million pounds of CO2 from being released into the atmosphere. Per EPA calculations, that equates to the annual carbon emissions of 70,000 gallons of gasoline. Brewers are also planning for future contingency plans to switch to nitrogen for aspects of their production instead of CO2. I'm Christy I. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.